It is week 43 of the year 2021. It's raining outside, but here inside it is warm and cozy, and I'm ready to bring you another episode of Father Roderick to the Max. It's good to be back at the microphone. I gotta give you an update on what's been going on. Of course, if you are subscribed to my show, The Walk, there have been some intermediate updates. But for those of you that are dependent on Father Roderick show and then this one, Father Roderick to the Max, you've been missing me for about 2 weeks. And of course, the reason is that I have been moving into my new home, my new rectory, which required all my attention. And in addition to that, I had my regular work. The show must go on. I've got my parish, not duties anymore, because I'm doing this because I like it, but I'm still assisting Father Henry in his parish. So there was plenty of stuff that kept me busy. And of course, the most important reason is I still don't have reliable, fast internet. So if you don't have a desk, if you don't have a setup yet, because you're moving in before everything is in place, and then you don't have internet to stream or to upload, it gets a little bit tricky to do what I love to do, and which is to make podcasts and share it with you. But I'm glad that at least today I'm back. I'm recording this on Halloween, on Hallows Eve. And of course, this is the time for a scary story. Speaking of which, let's talk about hell.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
Yes, health issues can be scary from time to time. My sister has just had another operation. She's having some health issues. My mom is also struggling with her health, and especially her hip that has to be replaced, or at least it's not working. So she has trouble walking, which is a cause of concern, of course, because she now lives alone. My dad is, as you know, in a care home. So even visiting him is now getting more difficult, and it's because of COVID. It's very difficult to get proper medical help if you have anything that is not urgent. We are currently in a situation where the number of infections is rising very rapidly. There are certain parts of the Netherlands where people refuse vaccination for religious reasons. It's mostly in the area called the Bible Belt, which the town where I currently live, Bennekom, is actually a part of. This is the fringe, you could say, of the Bible Belt, where you have these very kind of more fundamental Protestant faithful. And their idea is, well, if you just pray enough, then you won't get sick. And if you get sick and you die, then it's probably because you messed up and this is God's will anyway. So what does it matter if you get infected or not? The issue, of course, with that is that it's not just about you. It's also about you infecting other people. So, but anyway, we see that the large majority of the people that end up in hospitals is unvaccinated, but there are also more and more breakthrough infections of people that have been vaccinated, probably also because some of the effects of the vaccination are starting to wane off. So recently a joint committee of the major hospitals in the Netherlands have launched an appeal to the government to please bring back the distance rules and wearing masks in public places, and some more rules and regulations. Do something about the vaccination, the low vaccination percentage in these more fundamental parts of the Netherlands. But something needs to happen, because we are getting basically overloaded by now if this trend continues. We are now back at the worst time that we had in the summer, and that's when we almost got into another lockdown. So it's obvious that something needs to happen. But because of that, because now every hospital is so busy with new COVID patients, the people like my mom who needs medical attention for other reasons, they get into trouble. And then, of course, you've got even worse cases where someone is, for instance, needs to be operated for cancer, and then
they can't. There's just no room. There's no one to operate them or to take care of them. And so you get, of course, the great risk of the cancer spreading through their bodies, and people may die from this. So, scary times and worrisome also. I'm very happy that my health is a lot better than it used to be. Thankfully, the whole training for the marathon has definitely yielded fruit, and I'm really at a good weight right now. No longer overweight. I have a balanced situation. I do have some like lingering issues from running the marathon, but I still have to. Maybe I kind of I didn't overdo it, but I need to go and see a doctor here in the neighborhood. But the thing is, I still officially my doctor is in Amersfoort, and since I was not experiencing any medical issues, I didn't really seek another doctor here in Bennekom. But tomorrow I'll go and look for a second. I need some advice on some stuff. Plus, I'd like to have a general checkup, because of I know what my health was when I had long COVID, but I'd like to have a more objective assessment of what is the situation? How is my blood pressure? What about my cholesterol? What about my blood values? That sort of stuff. I need to know if I'm already there, so I can go into maintenance mode, or if there are still areas of my health that may need some extra improvement. Another thing that needs to be checked is my vision. During Corona, of course, it was kind of not high on my list to get new glasses or new lenses, but I'm noticing more and more that it's strenuous to work at the computer. I had a set of computer glasses that were made to give perfect focus if you're about a meter away from the monitor, and I use those also as reading glasses. Because when you read the Kindle, well, the distance is almost similar to sitting in front of a monitor. But I notice that is no longer the case. If I take my glasses off, I see the, like right now I'm looking at my iPad, and the letters are just like swimming a little bit. There are fringes that it's not clear. It's fatiguing. It's not relaxed. I notice that also when I'm reading on my Kindle, it's just giving me after a while great fatigue. And also watching TV, it's no longer very sharp. And so I need to go and get my eyes checked. Of course, it's been 5 years since the last time. So it is time for me to get a new prescription lenses. And I'm thinking of trying out, I'm not sure if it works for me, but I think of trying out bifocal contact lenses. Because glasses are fine if you go to the movies, but if you are like me and you're constantly outside filming, glasses are a pain because they constantly fog up, especially now that you have to wear masks in public transport. They get dirty, greasy. I've never regretted the day that I was able to get rid of my glasses because my eyes actually are fine. I can totally move around. I can even drive a car without wearing glasses because actually my farsightedness has improved. It's the nearsightedness that is worsening, and I have trouble because I work so much with screens. And I read a lot. I want that to be improved. But Father Michael, or Michel, who you may know as one of my companions when I go on vacation, he used to have glasses, but he switched to these very multifocal contact lenses, where you basically, I don't know exactly how it works, but I think it shows you both up close and far by. It's a bit of a mix, and your brain kind of sorts it out. But not every brain works with lenses like that. But to me, that sounds like the perfect solution. Like lenses, I can just put them in the morning, take them out at night, but then to not have to switch. Another option would be for me to get correction, just regular contact lenses for when I go to the movies or to see everything sharp again, and then get a pair of reading glasses just for reading. And then, of course, because the eyesight, my eyes are different, like one eye is much worse than the other one. Once that is leveled, then it's, you can just get a very simple pair of reading glasses and, it, and they will work always. But you need to get, of course, different reading glasses than the ones that I use now that have different eyes or different lenses for each eye, because I only wear one pair of glasses at the same time. Oh, the joys of getting older. And for those of you that are thinking to themselves, hey, I'm so glad I don't need those reading glasses. Wait for it. Wait for it. There'll be a day where you will think of this conversation and think, ah, I'm finally there. Yeah, Father Roderick used to have that. While I'm recording this segment about food, I'm actually smelling my oven right now down the stairs. I've put in some, what is it? It's a South American potato thing. I think they're filled with a sauce, and then you have to, you can fry them, of course, but that's not very healthy. So I put them in the oven because now I have an oven and it works. Woohoo! I've been cooking up a storm lately in my new kitchen. I am so, so happy that I have a kitchen to myself and I can just cook and try out stuff. Like this morning, I'm recording this on a Sunday. This morning we switched to from daylight saving time to whatever, winter, from summertime to wintertime. And I had an appointment to celebrate Mass in the neighboring parish location in Ada. But I woke up and I was like, we switched to winter time. So I've got an hour extra. Hey, I can do some of that meal prep that I've been wanting to do. So it's one of these ideas that I had, like once I have my own kitchen, I'm going to do meal prep, which means I'm going to cook ingredients for several meals of the week. And because I can do that, I can think it through. I'm not improvising that much, so I can make sure that every meal is healthy, and I can do much better calorie control, because I'm not stuck with leftover rice that I'm like, oh, I'll just eat it because I don't want to throw it away. No, I'll just divide it over several containers. And I bought these nice glass containers from IKEA with bamboo lids, and they are perfect size for my fridge, and I have six of them, so I can basically make lunch and dinner. Do I have 6 or 12? I'm starting to wonder. Or do I have 10? I don't know. At one point, I ran out of the bamboo lids and they're not available anymore anywhere. So, but what I wanted to do this morning was, let me just cook some rice. And I had some cauliflower rice, which is just basically cauliflower in tiny little pieces. And what I've done before at the rectory of Father Henry was I don't like just cauliflower rice because it's got this very distinctive cauliflower taste. But if you mix it with real rice, then it gets, in terms of calories, much lighter. But it still tastes like rice. It works much better than just cauliflower. So I prepared that this morning, and I started making some nasi, which is an Indonesian dish with some, what did I put in it? Spring onions, some very thinly sliced carrot, matches. It's all about, making them super thin so they cook properly. I used, what's the word? Prei in Dutch is... The word escapes me in English. But anyway, some veggies. And I started cooking. That was like so happy. So I made fried rice for three meals. And then I had a cucumber in the fridge that needed attention. It was really like, it's now or never. Tomorrow, it may not be good anymore. But then I was like, okay, so what can I prepare that I can actually prepare, not for today, but for tomorrow and maybe even the day after tomorrow. And I searched for some suggestions and came up with cucumber frittatas, or basically pancakes with lots of egg. And I made those. They turned out really well. I was like, I've never done something like this with cucumber. And I tasted one, and it was really good. It's very light and healthy, of course. So I'm going to put that on a recurring schedule for recipes. And then I made something else. What else did I make? What was it? Regular pancakes? I cannot remember. And it's, I see the box. What is it? Something that has the shape of pancakes. You know what? I can't remember. And the reason I can't remember is that the moment I was making that stuff, all of a sudden I'm realizing like, oh, wait a minute. I haven't got a clock here in the kitchen. What time is it? And then I realized that I've only got 20 minutes left before mass starts in the other parish location. And I'm still in my pajamas in the kitchen and I haven't gotten the shower or anything. Oops. But anyway, so while I'm recording this show, I've got these potato things in the oven, so I need to keep a close eye on the time. I do have smoke detectors in the house now. The electrician installed them this past week, but I'm not eager to use them yet or to try them out yet. So I need to need to keep this short, or maybe I should pause the recording for a second and make sure that they are okay. Yeah, what to do, actually. I don't know, because the time is running out, and I've got 15 seconds left before I need to go check up on them. You know what? I'm going to try to finish this show, and then I'll let you know via Instagram if the stuff is burnt. I don't think so, because I put them in frozen, so it will take a time. I didn't preheat the oven, so I may have some leeway here. Let's quickly move over to the next segment. Which button is that? I don't even know. This one. Things I learned from the internet. Well, oh my gosh, I've been doing a crash course on interior design. And I was mostly looking for ways to simplify my furniture. One of the things that I discovered was that even though I have a much bigger house than I used to have, it stresses me out to put everything back the way it was in my previous rectory. So I'm recording this in my studio room, which is upstairs. And I have these IKEA big bookshelves, bookcases on the left of me. And they're filled with knickknacks and all sorts of geeky stuff and books. And you know what? I no longer want this. It's too cluttered. It's too much. I used to have all my Blu-rays in there as well. Every Blu-ray has a different color. It is just awful. How did I ever like that? And so what I'm looking into right now is why does that bother me, all that clutter? And how can I make my bookshelves look like the ones at IKEA? So I went at IKEA's and took lots of photos of mostly focusing on how do they design their rooms? How does it always look so clean? Even though they display a lot, they cram, especially on their demo floor where you go through all these fake living rooms, they have a ton of stuff that they put on display there, but it never feels overwhelming. And it's what I discovered, it's all about balance. It's all about getting rid of the knickknacks. So one rule of thumb that I learned from a YouTube video by an interior designer was never use anything as to decorate your home that is smaller than your fist. Because all the little things, and I've got a ton of these little knickknacks, it gets too cluttered. Every little knickknack just requires your attention. So your eyes, instead of taking in the entire picture and rest, they get distracted by all the little stuff. And that's what I'm looking at right now. So I'm going to take everything out of this bookcase ensemble, and I'm just going to redecorate it with bigger stuff and keep it more uniform, also use less colors, make it look more natural. And one place where I've already succeeded in doing that, thanks to the stuff that I watched on YouTube is the kitchen. So one of the things that I saw was someone who was actually this Chinese lady. I think she's Chinese or maybe Korean. I think she's Korean. It's only subtitles. She never speaks. She never shows her face. But you see her in her kitchen. I think it's her husband who films everything, and it's really well produced. And then one of the things she explains is what you want is clean countertops. Why does a kitchen stress you out? It's because we clutter everything. We leave all our appliances, for instance, on the countertop. And I was like, oh, I do that. I had my bread machine on there, my microwave oven, my blender, the water cooker. All that was sitting there. And of course, I use it every day. But she recommends that you always clean the countertop every single evening. And then she shows you how you can implement routines, cleaning routines in your day-to-day life, and how much that is not just cleaning up like a chore, but can also be something that brings you peace. And I was like, oh, I like that idea. I know from previous things I've learned how much these small habits can bring a certain rhythm to your life that makes it predictable. And so you don't have to focus on everything every time because you've got these habits. You don't have to stress out, what am I going to do now? Oh, you know, you have these habits. So it's this time of the day, do this. And while implementing those habits and executing them, I actually do get calmer. And what I saw in that video like really appealed to me. It's like this evening routine and this morning routine where you start by cleaning the countertops, leaving the kitchen completely, almost as a display kitchen at IKEA's. And then in the morning, you take out the cups and the plates from the dishwasher. You put those away immediately. Then you cook. Then after cooking, you immediately clean. And because the kitchen is so, you know, simple, and everything has its place. That's another trick. It's actually a very easy routine every day. So now I do that every morning. I start with this cleaning routine. I have my breakfast in the kitchen, and then I clean it and I leave the kitchen. And I know the rest of the day, this kitchen, when I walk into the kitchen, it's going to look like the way I designed it with IKEA. And it is, at first I was like, but that's not cozy. The kitchen needs to be, like, look at Bilbo's house. Everything, there were so many things in his house, and it wasn't that my ideal to have my own bag end. But then if you carefully look at the sets that they built for The Hobbit, yes, there is clutter, but it is designed clutter. You know, Bilbo, or the people that made his house, they really know how to make it look very, very pretty and harmonious, even though there is a lot of stuff in his house. And it's all about the balance. And so I'm trying to learn by these tutorials on YouTube, how can I do that myself? Because I know that my house can look like that. My kitchen already looks like that. My living room is next. And if you've seen the pictures that I posted on Instagram, I've got my little Hobbit corner. It's not yet ready because there's nothing on the walls yet, but I am trying to really think this through. Let's not overload my room with stuff. Let's, for instance, another video said, why always put the couch against the wall? If your house is big enough, try creating a little walkway behind the couch. So move it a little bit more away from the wall. And I'm thinking, yeah, I totally get that. That will make the impression when you walk into the room, so it will give some breathing room. It's nice to have some empty space, just like when you design. Like one of the ways you can spot an amateur designer when it comes to websites or even magazines or whatever is they use every single square of the page or the web page. Whereas good design uses a lot of negative space, a lot of emptiness to focus your mind and your eyes on what is truly essential. And if you put too much in a room or too much on the walls, it's too much, and less is better in this respect. So I'm really not, I have the chance to start again now, and I'm taking advantage of that to learn a lot about interior design, and it's so fascinating. And there's even a spiritual aspect to this, in the sense that by knowing that you need to create empty space where there's nothing requires me to say goodbye to a lot of the stuff that only a year ago I thought was the best thing ever. And that's hard, something that you know that, you know, last year I loved this. And now, am I throwing this away too quickly? And I'm thinking, no. I'm just learning more about what works for me and how to create visual peace. And the feeling that I get when I'm in my kitchen, that's what I want to feel everywhere in my house. That's the goal. And then if you have that, if it makes you feel good to have less stuff, then it's much easier to part with that stuff. And so the stress that comes with keeping too much clutter, even if it's precious stuff like personal memories, having the joy of having a house where you don't have to keep that around, even if it's in storage, just the idea of having your attic or your basement or your garage full of boxes that you will never open between now and your retirement, just get rid of it. And the value of not having to worry about that stuff is maybe much greater than the value that the stuff brings you, because they're just triggers for your memory, and your memories are in your head and not in the things. So yeah, it's a really, I like this phase. I like this whole process of learning how I work and what works for me. Really starting to worry about my potato stuff. Maybe I should run down the stairs real quickly and see what's going on there. So I just jumped back with the TARDIS, or forward actually in time, and it's now a few minutes later, and I'm here with the result of what I put in the oven, and it's a perfectly nice brown. It looks like a hash brown, but it is filled. Is that what you call it? Hash brown? Anyway, potato thing. And it's filled with a red sauce. Some of it is oozing out. So I'm going to try it here and see if it's good. Mmm. Oh, nice. Very much the way it looks, that's how it tastes. It's like golden brown potato crust, and then on the inside there's this nice tomato-like filling. There's no spice in it, but it's really a kind of a sweet, salty experience. Love it. But I'm glad I went down the stairs, because I think it was right in time. If I'd finished the show before checking on the oven, yeah, it would have all been burnt. Hey, let's talk about liturgical reforms at St. Peter's Basilica. This is something I knew they were doing, and there have already been some changes. For instance, if you follow Mountain Torek, the Catholic traveler, you may have noticed that it's no longer possible for individual priests to celebrate Mass on the side altars on the upper floor of the Basilica during the day. There are a few masses during the day, but they're all together. And if you want to join the celebration, you can do that by concelebrating. But individual groups are no longer allowed during the day to celebrate simultaneously in various places in the church. Now, this is still allowed in the catacombs. Down, if you go down to the level of where the older catacombs are, that's where individual groups can still come to have Mass, and those can happen simultaneously, because actually every catacomb is like its own chapel, so it's more separate. But some people were very upset by this change, and they were saying, well, this is just Pope Francis being, you know, he hates liturgy and stuff. Actually, Pope Francis has little to do with this change. This is part of a bigger change in the whole approach the situation in St. Peter's Basilica, there are two groups that take care of the basilica and of the pastoral duty. So you've got the fabric of the church. They do all the technical stuff, the maintenance, the preservation of the building. And then there is a group that is more like a, you could say like a prayer guild or something like that. Their job is it to help the church be a church. So there has to be prayers. And so they come together with the members to pray the liturgy of the hours, to assist at Mass. But recently, this group has been reflecting on the actual use of the basilica. And one of the things they noticed was that it's this weird, it almost doesn't feel like a church anymore. And one reason, of course, is all these tourists, people line up sometimes for hours to visit the basilica. And once they're there, they just are taking selfies. And I've been doing that also because it's such a big building. And there's not much that helps you, other than the beautiful art, of course, to have a spiritual experience. And this group has started to think, well, how can we change that? Can we help people to find Jesus? That's what this church is built for. So how come that doesn't happen? And one of the issues that they acknowledge is, you know, we have these common masses. So the reason that they stopped allowing these individual masses is that this is actually not a new rule. This is just implementing the rules of the missal, the Roman missal itself. It's not allowed in a building to have masses in various parts of the building at the same time. This used to be very common in the olden days, before the liturgical reforms of Vatican II, where you would have in a church several side altars, and priests would never concelebrate. They would all celebrate their individual masses at the same time. And this, of course, is kind of counters the idea of the Eucharist being a unifying experience, where everybody should be able to join. And The Eucharist is the one sacrifice of Christ, and so it's a little bit weird to have all these simultaneous masses in the same building. And I mean, it's different from like if you have like separate chapels, like downstairs and near the catacombs, where you literally enter a little room, so you don't even see the other masses that are celebrated. You may hear them, but you don't see them. But upstairs, they wanted to go back to kind of the original intention of the Roman Missal, and that is to make sure that the Eucharist is a unifying moment in this basilica. The problem, and this is something new that they acknowledged, is, well, those common masses are usually in Italian, but we are an international building, an international basilica, and a lot of the people that come here and want to participate in this mass, including priests, they don't speak Italian, so we need to do something about that. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, finally, I've been saying this for 10 years now. Please, the Vatican is not an Italian institution, and it needs to broaden itself to the rest of the world and speak the languages of the people they cater to. And it's been so common, it's a bit of an, I think it's arrogance also. You see it sometimes in France as well. It's such a big country and everybody speaks French and nobody, commonly speaks other languages. Well, of course, there are lots of exceptions nowadays. But used to be that if you were in France, you would only hear French. And so nobody would bother to try to speak English or another language. In Italy, kind of the same thing. Everybody in Rome was speaking Italian, and the Italian clergy and, you know, most of the curia was Italian. So they didn't even think of why it would be necessary to, for instance, do press releases in another language than Italian. It just baffled me. I was like, come on, this is important news. This was at the time of John Paul II, when he was sick. They were actually issuing press releases only in Italian. I'm thinking, dude, the entire world is watching what's happening now. Is it so hard to find someone who speaks English? And I think the same is true also for the liturgical life of the Basilica. I think it should reflect the what they do in Lourdes is such an example it should be such an example for the Vatican, where you have this international mass on Wednesday morning, And it's in all the languages, and they use these screens, and they have translations, all the songs, you can sing them in any language, and it all matches, and it's so well done, and it never detracts from the mystery that you're celebrating, and you really feel that you've been part of the celebration, even though you hear all these different languages. I think that's what they're currently realizing, and we need to move in that direction. And I applaud them for that, and I think this... Even years ago, when I was talking with Ravasi, it's a cardinal who works in one of the offices. He said, "You know, we should do much more with, for instance, the Vatican Museum, the Basilica, St. Peter's Square. It's important for us. We do this. We put so much effort in maintaining the museums because it's also a witness of the faith of generations, and art can evangelize. But still, there's so much more that we could do in terms of storytelling and trying to have people, to help people to have more than just a tourist experience, and help them to have a spiritual experience when they come here in the Vatican. And it doesn't happen by itself. And so we need to think about that. And I think what they're currently contemplating, and I don't know how this is going to work out, but at least they're thinking about it. And that's a good sign. That means that they are really adopting this missionary attitude of not take it for granted that the Holy Spirit will do all the work. You have to help, you know. There are things that you can do, especially now with modern communication and modern technology. I can think of a ton of things that you could do to improve the experience of pilgrims and tourists that will visit the Vatican. So I'll keep you up to speed as long as I get the information, because I read this on a blog, and I've not read this anywhere else. So this is the Pray Tell blog. This is praytellblog.com. You can look it up. There's some interesting articles there. Another article which I really thought was interesting was talking about some of the idolatry, almost, of people that say, hey, I cannot get infected when I go to Mass because the body and blood of Christ the bread and the wine are turning into the body and blood of Christ, so Christ cannot make me sick. So I don't have to take any precautions when I go to Mass because of the real presence of Jesus. And this is blog does what I've always also told everyone. That's not how it works. That's not how the force works. That's not how faith works. Usually this comes from people that have limited theological basis. St. Thomas Aquinas, one of the most important Catholic theologians, explains it very well by saying when the bread and the wine change into the body and blood of Christ, it is just the essence that changes, not what he calls the accidents, the outer... aspects, you could say. So it still tastes like bread. It has the molecular structure of bread. It's the wine still has alcohol in it, and the what he calls the accidents, so the alcohol, can still make you drunk. So it's not that it's now all of a sudden the blood of Christ and I can drink a liter of that and step into a car. That's not how it works. The essence has changed. So it's really the essence. In essence, it is the body and blood of Christ. It's the real presence of Christ. But the accidents are still there. And so if someone touches the host who is infected and the virus gets on the host, it's not because it's the body of Christ that it's not going to make you sick, because the accidents are still there. It's a very important distinction in these COVID times by this medieval theologian that I think is very helpful to realize. And saying that, oh, but, you know, I don't have to take any precautions because I have faith, that is in a certain way, I would say, a heresy. That's not how it works. Yes, of course, God can heal you. Yes, he can prevent you from getting sick. But he also wants you to be responsible. And God can also work through doctors and through vaccines. It's like this story of the guy, you know this story, who's on the rooftop because his town is drowned and the water is rising. And then there is this boat that comes along. And please step into the boat, sir. We will bring you to safety. No, I don't need to do that. I pray. I believe God will save me. And then there's a bigger boat that arrives. And no, I don't have to come with you because God is protecting me. And then a helicopter lowers a ladder because it's getting really dangerous. And then he's, no, I'm praying. I'm sure that God will save me. I have faith. And stepping into this helicopter would be a sign of my lack of faith. No, God will save me. I am praying. And then he drowns. And then he gets to heaven. And then St. Peter asks him, well, dude, why are you here? Yeah, I don't understand it either. I prayed and I was asking God to come and help me. And yet here I am. I died. And Peter said, well, dude, God sent you a boat, and then he sent you a bigger boat, and he sent you a helicopter. Some people. Anyway, that's what I wanted to share with you. Oh, I already pressed that button. Let's press this one. All righty, games. One of the big advantages of having internet on the 4th of November is that I can finally start using my Xbox Ultimate subscription, which I have for 3 years. And it basically allows me to play anything I want from the Xbox catalog. They have got a ton of games on there. And I can play it on my TV, on my big screen TV, which we actually mounted on the wall, which has been a lifelong dream of mine to have a TV on the wall. A week ago. And I also, like, I think 2 years ago, I think it was on a Black Friday or something like that. It was like one of those super discounted days. I picked up a sound bar. I used to have a special receiver with a wired speaker set, which was a surround set. The thing is, it was such a pain because all the surround speakers were not wireless. So you always had wires over the ground and like over the floor, thinking that's a disaster. There's technology for that. And so I picked up this set where you have basically a sound bar. It's an LG sound bar. And it even has Dolby Atmos. So it has some of the speakers project to the ceiling. And then with some trickery, it feels like the sound is coming from everywhere. There's this special theater mode, which is super impressive. And then I also have the two remote back speakers that you place behind you. And they're wireless too. And that in total should give me a super immersive sound experience when playing these video games. So I can't wait to play these games and watch these movies with the whole thing activated and being able to just stream from the internet again. Oh, there's going to be so much to look forward to. Now, which games am I looking forward to the most? I love to play the Star Wars game, which Samuel bought for me a while ago. Because the internet was so crappy and I couldn't sit all day on a computer chair. I've been waiting to play that game until, you know, my situation had improved. So I want to play that one. I want to really try out Microsoft Flight Simulator, which should look amazing on a big TV screen. There's also another upcoming game, which is graphically not impressive at all, but the author is one of my favorite gaming programmers. It's the guy who made Stardew Valley, which is a game that I played for days and days and days in a row. Concerned Ape is the company. But it's basically one guy who makes this game that sells millions. And he's now working on a sequel game called The Haunted Chocolatier. And it looks very much like Stardew Valley, but apparently it's a very different game and different story. If Stardew Valley's quality is an indication, then The Haunted Chocolatier is going to be equally impressive and amazing. And then, of course, I'm also looking forward to finally go back to The New World, which is the big MMORPG by Amazon, which I started to play right before I moved here. But again, lack of time, too much work, flaky internet, didn't make it a very good experience. So I'm looking forward to picking up where I left because that's an interesting game. I really liked playing that. Genshin Impact, same thing. Just didn't have the time to play it. This is what I tried to say when I was talking about simplifying my life and keeping the kitchen clean and leaving some empty space. I've noticed by going through this process that my life needs that also on a work level. I stuffed too much in my life, too much podcast. Well, podcasts is not much, but way too much television production, 30 episodes that are like mini documentaries every week. All the other work that you have to do for that, you know, it's just not just making a TV show, but also writing the texts and providing them with photos and film. Ugh. It's way too much for one person. And normally with bigger budgets, you would be able to hire people, so it wouldn't, you know, weigh so much on me, but that the budget is too small for that. So I'm now at a point where I'm thinking, you know what, I'm done with that. I want to create some negative space in my life again to be able to do the things that I love, that give me energy, that make me happy, like doing this, talking to you, recording a show. I want to do that and still have time to spare to play a video game instead of just working long, long days and then just paying for it by my health. That's not a good trade. It's not what God wants. So hopefully next week I'll have a little bit more clarity about what the next year is going to look like. But when it's up to me, I'm going to simplify. Let me do two big series or two documentaries per year and give me a bigger budget so I can actually enlist some help. That's what I want to propose to the television people. And if they don't want that for whatever reason, then, you know, that's okay. As I said in the walk, I'm not going to beg for it. If they want me, if they want me to stay involved on television, they'd better make it possible for me. But I'm not going to continue another year like I've done for the past 3 years. It's just not feasible anymore. And I'm also missing out on tons of other opportunities. And the most important of which is just enjoying sharing stuff with my followers everywhere in the world. That's what makes me happy and makes me very unhappy that I've been for half a year in a situation where I had so much trouble doing that. And I miss it. And I know that you miss it too. So let's work together and return to normal soon. And with that, I'm returning to my croquettes, my nice, sauce-filled hash browns. They're so good. You know what? I can eat these for breakfast as well. So yummy. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a wonderful week. And stay healthy. Thank you so much for your ongoing support. Means the world to me. Talk to you later. God bless.